This is a Federal News Network podcast.
Welcome to For Your Benefit, presented by NITP, the federal leader in retirement planning seminars sponsored by WEPA. Join NITP for an hour of plain talk on planning your future. You've got questions, they've got answers.
Great. Good morning. My name is Bob Lyons, and we have a guest today, David Santana. And David is with the health insurance specialist from the Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services. Wow. Good morning, David.
Good morning, Bob. Thank you so much for having me in the show this morning.
Well, thanks for coming in, because you can explain what oftentimes I think people find the unexplainable. So we're going to talk about different things underlying the Medicare system. Do you understand your choices, the cost in Medicare and premiums, et cetera? So why don't we start out with a very general question. What is Medicare? Just so that everybody's tracking.
Absolutely. That's a great way to begin, Bob, because I know there are some folks that that have listened probably in the past, but there's some people that may be listening for the first time. So it's definitely a good idea to start from the basics and then move on to the more detailed thing. So again, I'm David Santana, and I work for the Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services. And for those who may not be familiar with this agency, we are one of the 11 agencies under the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services. And our primary responsibility is administering the Medicare program, which we're going to be talking about today. So to the question of what is Medicare, right? So Medicare is a federal health insurance program that was signed into law all the way back in 1965. And back then was just for people who were 65 years of age and over. Later on in 1972, however, the program was expanded to include two additional group of individuals. Those under 65 and receiving Social Security disability benefits for at least 2 years were automatically qualified or enrolled in Medicare. And the last group of individuals at any age who develop end-stage renal disease, which is kidney failure that requires kidney dialysis and kidney transplant to maintain life. So those are the three group of individuals that qualify for our Medicare program.
All right. Now, do these individuals, let me back up. You talk to many government groups. What do you find that might be, I won't call it commonplace, but often where people don't understand a provision in Medicare that you would think, and it's not belittling anybody because I probably wouldn't understand it, that it's kind of a basic knowledge that'll help you open other doors?
Absolutely. So specifically for, you know, in the Washington D.C. metro area that we have many federal employees, I think the general question is, because when we have health insurance, either, you know, through the federal government or even if you work for a private company. If you have health insurance through that to that private company, oftentimes you can take that health insurance into retirement, right? Specific to federal employees, for example, if you meet certain requirements, you can take that health insurance into retirement. So the question comes as to, okay, I already have health insurance. It works great for me. I have been using it for many years now. I can take it into retirement. Why would I need to learn about Medicare, right? If that insurance is working for me. So I think that many people don't take the time to kind of learn all the ins and outs based on the premise that, okay, I already have health insurance. So I think what I tried to explain to my federal colleagues is that Medicare is a benefits that is available to us as federal employees. And at the end of the day, it's about learning about the benefits that are available to us and then maximizing those benefits, right? So that's what it's all about at the end of the day, learning about it, maximizing it when you become eligible. And this is whether you are planning to, for example, keep working beyond the age of 65, or you're planning to retire even before you turn 65. I think it's important to know what the program is, what's offered to us. So at the very least, once you have that information, you can make an informed choice when you become eligible for Medicare. So that's what I find most, a common misconception there when we are aging because we already have health insurance. Why learn about Medicare, right?
Well, right. Now, is age 65, is there something magic about age 65?
There is a magic that the program originally was created for individuals when they turn 65. Almost anyone in the U.S., when they turn 65, they become eligible for Medicare. I mean, you do need to meet certain other requirements, such as, you have to be a U.S. citizen, or you have to be legally, lawfully residing here in the United States before you can enroll in Medicare. So age 65, yes, it's a magic number because everyone become eligible for Medicare, for as long as you meet those other two requirements, U.S. citizen, and then you also have to be lawfully residing here in the U.S. And sometimes there is a residency time in residing for those individuals who are, for example, have immigration status, such as adjusting your immigration to lawfully admitted for permanent residency. It's required that you be here for at least 5 years in certain situations. But other than that, that is the magic of age 65, right? That we all become eligible for Medicare. And again, that applies to even to us as federal employees that we already have health insurance benefits. When we turn 65, it's important to know exactly, what is Medicare and what you can get out of Medicare. And again, that is regardless of whether you're going to keep working or you plan to retire before the age of 65. So with that said, Bob, I'd like to kind of talk a little bit about the parts of Medicare, right? Because we learn what Medicare is. And people oftentimes get kind of confused. I heard that Medicare have parts. So what exactly does that mean? What each parts represent? Which part I definitely should enroll, whether I'm planning to work or retire, which part I should strongly consider enrolling? So Medicare essentially have, we say that we have three main parts, right? Medicare Part A is hospital insurance. That's the part of Medicare that will cover an individual when they become an inpatient in the hospital. Now, Medicare Part B is medical insurance, and that is the part that covers for mostly all professional services that happens typically outside of the hospital, such as doctor visits, durable medical equipment, laboratory tests, and more. That is Medicare Part B. Medicare Part D, as David, is drug coverage for people in Medicare. That part is offered through a private company, a private plan that contracts with Medicare to offer prescription drug coverage for individuals who are enrolled in Medicare. That is because, in general, Medicare doesn't cover for doesn't have prescription drug benefits, outpatient prescription drug. For example, when you go to the doctor, you come out with a prescription to treat your condition. When you go to the pharmacy, that's typically not covered under Medicare Part B. So that's the need of individuals to look at a private plan that could cover your prescription drugs when you go to the pharmacist. And there is a Medicare Advantage plan that people came to. It's also known as Medicare Part C. And what's interested what's interesting about the Medicare Advantage plan, that this is like a private option for people in Medicare. For example, if you want a private health insurance plan to administer your care, you could do that through a Medicare Advantage plans. And many people, because they become familiar how private companies operate, they would rather go this route, kind of enroll in those private plans so they can get the benefits. Now, when you get when you enroll in one of these private plans, it functions pretty much like any other health insurance that you have out there. You have one card that you use when you go to the hospital, to the doctor, to the pharmacist. You only have one card. And so that people in Medicare have this option as well. Also, federal employees, now there are federal, part of the FEHB plans are offering their own Medicare Advantage plans through the federal government, right, through the FEHB program. So that's another interesting option that people have now. When they retire, they could choose one of those FEHB plans that are offered through the FEHB market, not in the Medicare, but in the FEHB market. And, you know, people ask, okay, so why would I need to learn about those plans if I already have FEHB? Well, those plans comes with perks, with additional perks, right? So for example, if you choose one of the FEHB plans, those plans are offering people to offering help with their Medicare Part B premium, for example, and they have additional benefits that that go beyond FEHB or Medicare. We could talk a little bit more about that.
What do you find? I think, well, wait a minute. Andrew says it's probably a good time for a break. Rather than me ask you this question, because it could carry on into the break. So let's listen to what the good folks at WAIPA, the sponsor of the show, can do for the listeners.
Times have changed, but WAIPA's mission remains the same: to promote the health, welfare, and financial well-being of civilian federal employees. WAIPA offers group term life insurance to civilian federal employees with up to $1.5 million in coverage, regardless of salary. As a WAIPA member, you can access exclusive rates and benefits not available to the general public. How does this compare to Fegley? Unlike Fegley, WAIPA's coverage amounts are not capped by your salary. WAIPA will cover your family as well. For your children, WAIPA offers double the benefits that Fegley offers. And for your spouse, WAIPA offers 20 times more coverage than Fegley. 20 times more coverage. WAIPA's coverage is also portable if you decide to leave the federal government or retire. You can even supplement or replace your existing policy. See how much you could save by visiting waepa.org today.
Okay, welcome back to For Your Benefit. We're here today with David Santana. And David is with the health insurance specialist from the Centers for Medicare and Medicaid, and explained vividly how all this works. Vividly, I'm glad this is taped so that I can go back and get more appreciation for all the different choices and the like. So we were, I think, heading into what are Medicare choice coverage choices. And you, I think, covered them well. What do we have? Four different ones, A, B, C, D?
Correct. So you do have the, you know, the original Medicare that, like I mentioned, Medicare has four parts, right? Medicare Part A, hospital insurance. Medicare Part B, which is medical insurance. We have also Medicare Part D, which is drug coverage. And also we have Medicare Advantage plans that are a private option for people in Medicare. And those are also known as Medicare Part C. So those are the main four parts of Medicare.
Okay. And then we've got that, but what about costs? I mean, I guess they're out-of-pocket costs as well as the monthly cost.
Oh, that's a almost the most frequently asked question. So,
we had to get the basics. We had to get the basics. Right? Okay, go ahead. Sorry.
Right. So, you know, when people evaluate options, for example, I was talking about maximizing benefits, right? I already have health insurance through the federal government. I can take it into retirement. You know, what would I get from enrolling in Medicare? You know, how much is it going to cost me? And am I going to get a return from my investments? I mentioned that I'm hoping to give you some basic information so you can determine which part of Medicare, of the four parts that I mentioned, which part of Medicare you should definitely enroll, which part of Medicare you should you may not enroll because you may not get a return for your investment, and which part of Medicare you should strongly consider enrolling. So with that in mind, let's talk about cost and begin with Medicare Part A in a logical order. How much is it going to cost me to enroll in Medicare Part A? Well, 99.9% of people that qualify to enroll in Medicare gets Medicare Part A premium free. So they don't have to pay premium for Medicare Part A. Why, you may ask? Well, when we work and pay into the Social Security system, we accumulate work credits. You typically accumulate, for example, you typically accumulate 4 work credits per year. So at a 10-year mark that you have been working, you qualify for Social Security benefits. And this could either be through yourself, through your work history, or if you're married to someone who has worked and accumulated the required amount of working credits. So to begin with, Medicare Part A is premium free for most people out there. So when you age into Medicare, and I ask you the question, should I enroll in Medicare Part A? And this is whether you're working or retired. I think the answer is obvious. If it's something that you earned that benefits because you pay taxes while you were working, or you were married to someone who paid taxes while they were working, that part of Medicare is premium free. Now, what can you expect from Medicare Part A? Like I mentioned, you can expect to receive many services. Inpatient hospital care, which basically includes everything that you get inside the hospital, such as room and board, meals, prescription drug, everything that you get inside the hospital is covered under Medicare Part A. Now, Medicare Part B is different, right? We talk about Medicare Part A. We pay taxes while we were working to earn that benefits. Now, Medicare Part B is different. You don't pay taxes while you were working, so there is not really a pre-entitlement there for Medicare Part B. Once you become eligible for Medicare and you qualify to enroll in Part A, you could also enroll in Part B if you liked. If you do enroll in Part B, you have to pay a premium. So everyone really pays a premium to enroll in Medicare Part B. And if anyone said that they're not paying the premium, it's because someone else is paying on their behalf. Typically, if you have certain limited income and resources, the state have programs to help people with their Medicare Part B premium. So with that said, the Medicare Part B premium for this year, what we call the standard Medicare Part B premium, is $164.90. That is your monthly Medicare Part B premium. Now, what's interesting about the Medicare Part B premium, however, is that that is the standard premium. However, the premium is based on income. So the federal government subsidizes 75% of the Medicare Part B premium for the vast majority of individuals. We sell about 93% of the population that gets that enrolls in Medicare nowadays. The federal government subsidizes 75% of that premium, and they're responsible for 25%. So that is to say that the $164.90 basically represents 20 5% of the Medicare Part B premium. So the real premium, the real Medicare Part B premium without the subsidy is $659.60, but the federal government, again, subsidizes 75% of that. Now, as your income goes higher, for example, if your income as a single tax filer is more than $97,000, or joint tax filer making more than $194,000, they will pay a higher share of the Medicare Part B premium. So instead of paying 25% of the premium, they will be required to pay 35%, 50%, 65%, 80%, and 85% respectively. There is an income bracket that you may fall in there, and that would determine how much you have to pay on Medicare Part B premium. So again, it goes anyone making more than $97,000 as a single tax file or $194,000 could end up paying a little bit more on their Medicare Part B premium. Typically, when the individual enroll in Medicare, they will be looking at the taxes that they file 2 years prior to the year that they enroll to determine their Medicare Part B premium. However, if they experience a life-changing event such as, I was working 2 years ago and now I retire and that's why I'm enrolling in Medicare. So my income, of course, have gone down, significantly because now I am retired. I was working 2 years ago. So those amounts could be adjusted if the individual, for example, retire and experience a significant reduction on their income. So that is a little bit, Bob, about, the cost of Medicare. Again, Medicare Part A, premium free for the vast majority of individuals that work and pay into the system. Medicare Part B, everyone has to pay. And the premium is based on a sliding scale based on your income when you enroll in Medicare.
Okay, could I ask you a question? Is the definition of income, all income, let's say like interest on a savings account or dividends from a mutual fund, would it also include the retiree's pension, their annuity, or is it more based on work income, or is it all the above? Because there's a line on the tax return that says, here's everything. That's what you have to deal with.
Exactly. And that's an excellent question. So it is based on modified adjusted gross income. And I know you know more about this subject than me, Bob. But it's based on modified adjusted gross income.
So modified adjusted gross
income, as you know, is not a line in your tax return.
Right.
But modified adjusted gross income, right? So for the vast majority of people, the modified adjusted gross income is the same as the adjusted gross income, because the modified adjusted gross income just add back into the calculation certain interest, earnings, incomes, and things that sometimes you can deduct, and it's not counted as your adjusted gross income. So again, typically not a line in your tax return is a number that has to be calculated. People oftentimes ask, what if I catch my thrift saving, my 401k, what if I sell a property and that increases my income? All of those things that you have to report in your tax return as capital gain will be counted. So if you do sell the house this year, for example, I've been enrolled in Medicare, I sell my house this year, I walk away with, $500,000. That'll be considered, a capital gain for that year. So I may have to pay a higher Medicare Part B premium for at least 1 year. That is the year that I reported that as a capital gain. So you will be required to pay a higher premium because of that capital gain that you reported on your taxes. But so, that would be for 1 year only.
So somebody sold their house, let's say this year, or their home, this year. This would impact then the premium for next year, because you can't retroactively go back to January 1st, I don't think. So would it then impact the subsequent year from what happened? Or does it hit right when they sold the house?
No, it doesn't hit right away. It hits after, because, I mean, let's say that, you know, it's March now. I sell my house today. I made $500,000 in the house sale. I don't report that until next year's taxes, until I file my taxes next year. And Social Security may get that information from the IRS the following year. So once Social Security get that information from the IRS, they'll send the notification saying, you know, your premium will be set this much for this coming year, because this is what we got from the IRS. Of course, Social Security always ask, if you dispute this information, please write to us, or you can appeal that decision. But in any event, in circumstances like this, typically the individual will be advised how much they're going to pay. And this is usually prospectively. They wouldn't go back to that year of Medicare Part B, the year that the individual sold the house, but rather, you know, when Social Security get that information after the individual file taxes and the information trickle down to Social Security.
Okay, so the increase, if there is one, because of the sale, something like that, or, you know, something else that caused the income to jump. Now, this is going to be kind of the reverse question. What happens when I have a very good year, but then the next year it's more normal because I don't have that pop? Then my premium would then decrease by the amount that it increased for that one high income year. I guess that's what happens.
And you guess right. You guess right. Like, you know, we were using the example of selling a property, right? That you would. You would report that as a capital gain for that year. So, but that's just for that year. The following year, you would not report the same money as a capital gain, because you already did it for the previous year. So once that happened, then your income would go back to what it was before. So then it will be readjusted again to meet your current situation.
Yeah, I had years ago, I had a client, I was trying to explain this. They did nicely on the sale of a house, and they were very mad that it would impact their premium. And so I said to them, I said, well, why don't you do this? Sell the house for less money. And they go, well, that's crazy. And I go, that is crazy. So it's 1 year, and it's not, I wouldn't say it's debilitating as far as your income goes, but nobody likes their taxes to go up. But anyway, then they go, oh, I get it now. It's a one and done. I did nicely on the house. Okay, I'll pay in a higher premium. It's not exorbitant. It's just higher, right?
Okay. Correct. No, it's not really an exorbitant, increase in premium. It's, for example, you know, I was talking about the $134.90, right? So that represents 25%. Now, paying 35% and instead of 25%, it only represents a few dollars more. Goes from 164 to 230, so it's really not that big of an increase.
Good. I wanted that to be clear so people listening don't go, well, this is terrible. It's a cost of higher income for a short period of time on a low amount. Anyway. Let's move off of that.
Well, so, we were talking about cost, which is an important topic, right, Bob? So sometimes we just need to spend a little bit more time to make sure that everyone understands.
Okay. So
go ahead.
No, I don't know what number of the questions we're on. Are we on five or six?
Yeah, but I was hoping that I could talk briefly about, before we go and start kind of going over questions, briefly explain when people enroll in Medicare, because that's another kind of important topic that people oftentimes question. It's like, okay, I know about Medicare. So when do I enroll in Medicare? You know, what's the process, right? So individuals can, I think everyone understands that full retirement age have gone up, depends on your age, up to 67, right? But I just finished mentioning that Medicare is for people who are, you know, turning 65. So people oftentimes question whether, you know, is Medicare is going to move to, enrolling in Medicare is going to move to full retirement age. So to answer that question is, although your full retirement age may be, you know, over 65, Medicare remains at the age of 65. We also understand that people can apply for Social Security or railroad retirement benefits as early as age 62. Now, if anyone apply for Social Security retirement benefits before they turn 65, those individuals are automatically enrolled in Medicare because they already applied and they're in a Social Security system. And as I mentioned, if you pay taxes for to earn Medicare Part A premium free, once you apply for your retirement benefits, that Medicare Part A is part of that package. So 3 months before you turn 65, you will be automatically enrolled if you already apply for Social Security retirement benefits. So and so that's a group of individuals that are automatically enrolled in Medicare. So what about everyone else? So we're gonna go over in more details in terms of when people would enroll at a later time.
Okay, so you time to take a break, Andrew.
Who do you trust when making your most important decisions? National Institute of Transition Planning has been the trusted source for federal retirement planning, serving new, mid-career, and pre-retirement federal employees for more than 30 years. NITP's subject matter experts bring more than 800 years of collective expertise on federal benefits, financial transition, and estate planning. Visit NITPinc.com. That's NITPinc.com to sign up for their free monthly newsletter and information about free webinars.
Are you at the mid-career stage of your federal career, or do you plan to retire in the next 5 years and wonder if you are prepared for retirement? No matter what career stage you are, it's never too early to dot the I's and cross the T's. NITP now offers online open enrollment training to help you understand your federal benefits package and financial planning options with tips and tools to plan and fine-tune your retirement planning goals. Visit NITPinc.com to download the current brochure and calendar.
All righty. Thanks, Andrew. And we are about ready to close. What do we have? How many more minutes do we have? Not many. 20, yeah, a little under 20 minutes. So, David, we have 20 minutes left. How do you want to parcel this out? I'm going to let you drive the bus here because we got like about five topics left we'll never cover in 20 minutes.
We could definitely do a highlight, Bob, but I was explaining how people enroll in Medicare. So I'll quickly explain how, if you don't get automatically signed up for Medicare, how do you go about enrolling in Medicare and when? So if you don't automatically get enrolled in Medicare because you haven't applied for Social Security or railroad benefits before you turn 65, you can enroll in Medicare during enrollment periods. That's when we open Medicare up for enrollment. So the first opportunity that individuals get to enroll in Medicare is when they turn 65, right, Bob? So going back to the magic of 65. So yes. When you're turning 65, Medicare opened up for enrollment for 7 months. 3 months before you turn 65, the month you are 65, and then 3 months after. So that's your 7 month opportunity, open window to sign up for Medicare. However, if you, for whatever reason, if you don't enroll during that time, we open Medicare up for enrollment every year from January through the end of March. Now, if you did not enroll when we first give you the opportunity, but you enroll during the general enrollment period, it is possible that you will pay a late enrollment penalty for Medicare Part B or Medicare Part A if you have to pay a premium. So the penalty is 10% for each 12 months that you could have been enrolled but decided not to do it. So if you wait 1 year, it's 10%, 2 year, 20, 5 year, 50%, and that penalty will go for life. Now, there is always exceptions to the rules. So the exception is that if you are actively working and you have health insurance through that employer, you don't have to enroll in Medicare, specifically Medicare Part B, when you turn 65, because typically your employer plan continue to be primary for as long as you're actively working. Now, in general, your employer plan will be primary unless you work for a small employer that has less than 20 employees or you qualify for Medicare based on disability, in which case, if you're working for an employer who has less than 100 employees, then that employer plan typically is the primary health insurance for Medicare. So you do have, like if you are working and have health insurance, you have a special enrollment period. You can enroll in Medicare at any time while you're actively working, and that continues for 8 months after the individual retire. They could do it around that time with no waiting, no penalty. So again, initial enrollment, 7 months around your 65th birthday. You miss that enrollment, you can enroll every year from January through March. And there may be a late enrollment penalty unless you are working at the age of 65 and have health insurance through your employer, or you have health insurance through your to a spouse who is currently working. And in which case, you don't need to enroll in Medicare. You can enroll at any time while working, and that continues for 8 months after you retire. And that basically is the general overview of what we have gone through so far, Bob. So we talked about Medicare Part A. What did we learn? It is premium free from the vast majority of people, and it comes with a lot of great benefits. What we learn about Medicare Part B, it is a health insurance that pays for professional services, mainly services that you get outside of the hospital. It comes with a lot of great benefits too. But everyone have to pay a Medicare Part B premium, and the premium is based on income, right? So we have to be mindful of that. What do we learn about Medicare Part D drug coverage? If you want drug coverage under Medicare, you typically need to get it through a separate private plan that contracts with Medicare. And we also learn about Medicare Advantage Plan, which is a private option that exists for people who are enrolled in Medicare. These plans comes with typically with more benefits that go beyond original Medicare benefits. And some of these plans are offering to pay the cost of Medicare Part B premium, to help with the cost of Medicare Part B premium. We also learned that people can enroll in Medicare around their 65th birthday, 7 months. They can enroll from January through March, and there's also a special enrollment period. So that is basically a quick summary of what we have gone through. And I think with that in mind, Bob, we can just go ahead and start taking questions.
All right, what do we got, Andrew? We got 12 minutes left. Andrew says we got 12 minutes. So what do we need to pick up and carry forward so we can cover it within the next 12 minutes. I'm sure we could probably go.
You can go through some of the other questions that we have, Bob, and I'll be happy to address those questions.
There's one here. If I have Medicare Advantage, do I need to have Part D, or did you already cover that?
No, that's a great question, because I talked about separately Medicare Part D and Medicare Advantage Part C. So that's a great question. So if you enroll, and that's another, advantage that people find about enrolling in this private plan, because you typically have one company, one card that you use across healthcare settings, right? Using the hospital, doctor, and at the pharmacy counter. So if you enroll in a Medicare Advantage plan, those plans ideally come with drug coverage. So if you enroll in Medicare Advantage plan, again, one of the advantages that you have one card, one company that you use across healthcare settings, as opposed to, for example, if you enroll only in Medicare Part A and B, if you wanted to stay that way, which is fine, many people keep the original Medicare program, which is a nationwide program that operates pretty much in the 50 states in the United States and its territories. And you don't need referrals to see a specialist and or to go to any hospital that you like. So you do enjoy quite a bit of freedom when you are in the original Medicare. However, if you want outpatient drug coverage, you really need to look into buying a separate a plan that will pay for your drugs when you go to the pharmacy. Individuals also look at buying supplement policies that pay for out-of-pocket expenses that Medicare doesn't pay for. Because one thing that we didn't go over is the out-of-pocket expenses, because one thing is paying a premium, right? And another thing is when you go and receive services, you usually have deductibles and copayments and coinsurance and things that we have to pay. So people oftentimes, if you stay in the original Medicare, you oftentimes need to look at a separate drug plan and a separate Medicare supplement policy. So you're carrying around three cards, right? Medicare, drug coverage, and then supplemental plan. If you do enroll in a Medicare Advantage plan, however, the vast majority of this plan already include prescription drugs. So you would only have one card. So that is the main difference, Bob, between a Medicare Advantage plan and a prescription and a separate drug plan.
Okay. So when somebody registers for Medicare, how does that impact any dependents that might have federal employee health benefits?
So let's say I have a health insurance through the federal government as a self-plus family. Let's say I turn 65 this year and I'm planning to sign up for Medicare. I'm retiring, I'm signing up for Medicare. What happened to my family coverage on the FEHB? Nothing really happened to my family. What would change is that if I enrolled in Medicare and I'm retired, Medicare is primary, my FEHB will be secondary. For my family, FEHB will continue to pay as they have been paying all along. So really nothing will change for my family. Not much will change for me either. It's just the fact that Medicare, if I enrolled in Medicare, Medicare would be my primary policy and FEHB will be secondary because I am retired. So my family will not be impacted by the fact that I'm turning 65 and enrolling in Medicare.
Okay. Here's one. At what income level does Irma impact somebody? Irma is an unwelcome guest, but in a sense, it's good because it means your income goes up. So Irma is an increase in your income tax. But it impacts people, I would say, with, I won't say higher income than most, but it could surprise people, especially one year where they might take more out of the TSP for something special, and that could kick in. They need to be aware of it. So I forget the dollar amounts that it kicks in.
Right. So the this year, the higher amount kicks in for a single tax filer making more than $97,000. And a joint tax filer making more than $194,000. So anyone making more than 97 as single or 194 as joint tax filer would pay an additional, a higher Medicare Part B premium. And again, we went over, what may impact your your modified adjusted gross incomes, you know, such as, you know, selling a property, cashing out retirement savings and things could impact your bottom line when you file your taxes.
So, you know, just so that nobody listens to this and says this is terrible, this is, you know, a substantial amount of income, but it's on your tax return. So some of that might be sheltered because somebody's salary might be high or income level might be high, but they could put more money into the TSP if they haven't already to reduce that income from, something called
correct
adjusted gross. So, I mean, we're getting a little bit out there, but what I wanted to leave with the listeners is say there are ways to do your year-end tax planning, not in December, like November
correct.
Or so.
Correct.
And somebody's going to say, well, that's just an accountant, but, you know, there's, you know, this substantial amount of money with not having to spend substantial amount of hours understanding it.
Correct.
Okay, sorry. The accountant in me jumped out, so let's get back to reality. So what do you find in all the different groups that you present this topic to? What do you find sometimes that you're a little surprised that, gee, I thought this was not necessarily common knowledge. This is no disrespect to the audience, but, you know, the audience usually they have a professional background, and this maybe doesn't include a full understanding of that. But if you've been listening to the show for a while, you're talking about, you know, a decent amount of money. It's not just 1 year. It could continue on for years so that somebody would need to understand that. So I guess my question is, what do you find that maybe some people are not aware of that you say to yourself, gee, I thought that was common knowledge? No disrespect to the person, but we all have different jobs that we pay more attention to than maybe what we're talking about today.
Sure. When we are educating federal employees, one of the main things that I find that many of federal employees are not aware is that you are not required to enroll in Medicare, right? So Medicare is a choice that we have, and that's what I said in the beginning. It's about learning the benefits that are available to us so we can make an informed choice. But one thing that many people are not aware is that federal employees are not yet required to enroll in Medicare. So when you retire, you take your health insurance and you're happy with what you have and you don't really see the need after you learn what you learned today, if you don't really see the need to enroll in Medicare, it is your choice. We gave you information so you can make an informed choice. What we would recommend that when you retire, that we would recommend that you typically enroll in Medicare. Why? Because Medicare has been shaped and reshaped over the years to meet the need of the aging population. So there are many services that may be available. Yes.
Okay.
Are we getting to the time?
Your contact point, because we got about 30 seconds.
Okay. All right. So let's say, Bob, that anyone who has additional questions about this, please call 1-800-MEDICARE, which is open seven days a week, 24 hours, to answer your questions. And thank you so much, Bob, for having me on the show. I'm looking forward to the next opportunity.
Okay, and folks, remember the name, David Santana. All righty. David, thanks for being on, and let's do it again soon.
All right, sounds good. Thank you.
Bye-bye.
You've been listening to For Your Benefit, presented by NITP and sponsored by WEPA. Please tune in next Monday at 10 a.m. for a topic solely devoted to you, the federal employee. This show can also be heard on demand at federalnewsradio.com. Search For Your Benefit. Thanks for listening.